Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Okay, so this evening is the lunar observance night, and as is the custom, coming together and recollecting the refuges and precepts, things that are, that one takes as a basis of as a refuge, as a foundation for one's. You think in terms of refuge, the things that one, where one's mind and heart gravitate towards. What does my mind usually gravitate towards? And you think, it depends on different people's temperament and personality. And you can gravitate toward, depending on the mood, it'll gravitate to something that we're looking to either stimulate, distract, find something pleasurable, interesting, exciting. It could be the mind gravitates to something that one finds irritating, frustrating, aggravating. Mind goes towards aversion, or just goes to confusion, doubt, uncertainty. So those are kind of the tendencies of the mind. But then, if one is looking to develop a sense of stability, clarity, peace, then one wants to find a refuge for the mind. One wants to find something that the mind takes as an anchor, and say the traditional refuges of Buddha Dhamma Sangha are an anchor in virtue, in truth, in wisdom, and these are things that we cultivate and develop. And so then with the refuges, precepts are a basis for. Especially on the lunar observance night, having a time that one takes for a day and a night to establish a basis of simplicity and integrity, so that there's a commitment to harmlessness and simplicity that helps the mind become settled and clear, so that both on a personal level, but then also in terms of being within a communal aspect of people who are focused and putting forth our energy, effort towards that kind of integrity and simplicity. It has a power to support and encourage the mind to become settled and clear. These are external ways of reminding ourselves or helping to support ourselves to find a foundation for establishing clarity within the heart. But as we also develop a commitment to the training of the mind, training of the heart, and meditation, what one's doing is training the ability of the mind to establish attention. Our attention tends to get hijacked by all sorts of different things. Either the external world with various distractions and things that keep the mind busy, or just the internal distractions that we inevitably get caught up in. Moods of the mind, different ways that the mind gets caught and distracted. So that to picking up a meditation object, and particularly during this period of time of winter retreat, where we're putting a lot of time and attention and effort toward developing the formal meditations, it's helpful to review and recollect how to be skillful in establishing the foundation for our meditation. There's the different formal techniques that we use. Mindfulness of breathing could be recitation of a mantra, a bhutto, could be recollections of the body, developing of and cultivation of loving kindness. And these are all worthy and skillful ways of directing attention. But it's important to one to be really clear on how we pick up a meditation object. The tendency of the mind is to sometimes to we have we sit in formal meditation posture, begin to direct attention to to the breath, if we're using breath meditation. Paying attention to the breath as it comes in, the breath as it comes out, developing a continuity of mindfulness. But it's easy to get lulled into a rhythm of thinking that we're paying attention, but not really being very reflective, not really investigating, and a whole meditation period can go by, and you can, the bell rings, and say, "What the heck was I doing there?" So that it's necessary to question oneself. Okay, am I really, am I actually mindful and alert? Am I aware? Am I reflecting? I was thinking on when the Buddha describes the establishing of mindfulness, there's the qualities that he's pointing to, or the sense of putting forth an effort to go against the habits of the mind, to go against the different things that stain the moods of the mind. Sense of being willing to go against the stream of one's habitual tendencies, and of course the habitual tendencies tend to distraction or some kind of restlessness, agitation, or dullness, and to make the mind bright, make the mind clear. That sense of clear comprehension, reflecting, investigating, what is what I'm doing, leading to clarity and well-being? Is what I'm doing leading to understanding and wholesome mental states? And being willing to pull back from the tendency of the mind to just follow its likes and its dislikes, so because sometimes the way that attention works is that we work on assumptions, or what comes to mind is it's a few years ago now, there was a YouTube video going around of where you look at this video clip and you try to they're basketball and they're passing a ball back and forth and you're supposed to, I can't remember, so you count how many times it's passed back and forth or it's passed between the white and black players or something. And at the end of the clip, and you're asked sort of, did you notice anything a bit different? And most people say, no, not really. But during the clip, they're passing this basketball back and forth, and then somebody goes through the group in a gorilla suit, and most people don't notice it, they walk through the group, and just when you go back and look at it, and they even wave, and people don't notice it. I didn't notice it. You get fixed on a kind of a program or an assumption, an idea. I'm supposed to be doing this, and then you miss something that's really. Actually, it should be, a gorilla suit. You should notice it. Uh, and And we don't. It's the way our minds work. We miss things. We shut things out. Or our attention is really selective. So that we tend to... What we select, of course, are our likes and our dislikes and our things that that we feel are important to us at the time. And we miss a lot, actually. So that's that training in mindfulness for the mind to become peaceful and settled. We have to be willing to question the mind and to be willing to reflect. And this is why, they say things like the refuges are really important in the sense of if we place as something that's really important, is something that actually really nourishes and supports wisdom and integrity and truth, so that's what we're taking as a refuge, and that's what we'd want our minds to pay attention to. So it's a training that we need to be reflecting, investigating, questioning, challenging even. So that in meditation, it can very easily be, okay, you sit down, you pay attention to the breath, breath goes in, breath goes out, and you get lulled into following a particular habit of mind or getting stuck into a place of, it's kind of peaceful, but it's not very clear. Or it's not really investigating. So those are a training of attention. It's important to be questioning and reflecting, because that's it's just the way the human mind works. Just like that example of the gorilla suit, but it plays itself out in many ways, like in the medical profession, if you go to a doctor and you've got something that's maybe a bit out of the ordinary, and oftentimes, say for a doctor, they see a range of illnesses and symptoms and conditions, and what they're used to seeing, they tend to see within that framework. So that if something is out of the ordinary, they can very easily miss it. So that sometimes it's necessary sometimes one has an illness that is out of the ordinary. One is sometimes seeing many different doctors, or there's within the medical profession, there's, I think it's called a diagnostician. There are doctors who are used to discarding the ordinary things and looking for things that are out of the ordinary. Because and it's a necessary thing. If for a doctor looking at receiving patients every day, if they went through all of the possibilities, then it'd just be tedious, and most people are fall within that range. But that. But it is the way that the mind works, is to gravitate towards the things that we're used to, that were common, but particularly if we're thinking in terms of bringing the mind to a place of peace and clarity and freedom, then we need to challenge it. We need to not get stuck into a routine, particularly in meditation. It's so easy for the mind to fall into a routine. And in some ways, of course, the routine is helpful. Just say like we're doing this past since the start of the month. Just every day, keeping up a steady routine, having group practice. It helps to build up a momentum of effort and application and there's an energizing quality that comes from that. But then you can't rely on that completely. You have to have an inner resource as well that you're cultivating, an inner a developing of attention questioning, looking closely at our experience. Because we miss things. It's like they did tests with pilots in flight simulators, and sort of like retesting pilots and commercial pilots, and I guess in this flight simulators, and things are displayed both on the screen and on the in front of them, and then from time to time they would in the flight simulation they throw in a plane parked on the runway, and in a large number of cases, they missed seeing this. It was out of the ordinary. They missed seeing another plane parked in front of them when they're coming down to land. And it's the tendency of the human mind. We get used to things, and we're not expecting to see. So we see what we're used to. We see what our preferences are. We see where, according to our habits and our likes and our dislikes. So it takes an extra bit of attention and application for the mind to really see through these tendencies. And that's what, when we think of the word that we say insight meditation, vipassana, what it literally means is seeing through. So being able to see through the habits, the tendencies, the ways that we get caught. And of course, when we get caught, what happens is we experience some kind of discontent, dissatisfaction, some kind of suffering. The whole point of the Buddha's teaching is to give us the tools to free the mind from that from the tendency to suffer. So that and the Buddha said that is this is completely possible for us as humans. It's not impossible. There's times when the Buddha said, if it was impossible, I wouldn't teach it. But it is possible. Therefore, I teach it. So that this possibility of freeing the mind from its tendency to create problems and difficulties for itself. It's something that we can learn and we can cultivate. And see the ability of the mind to choose something that is, yeah, something that's a refuge, rather than an obstacle. Having the sufficient clarity to see, okay, what is an actual refuge for the heart? What is something that is a support for the heart? Ajahn Chah would say that we have to rather than following the moods of the mind, we need to be able to find the kind of the underlying truth behind those moods, and the truth being that they're insubstantial, that they're impermanent, that they're uncertain, and when we can look at that uncertainty and look at that sort of sense of, okay, these different moods and the things that the mind tends to grasp onto, and we can say, okay, this is uncertain, this is changing, this is impermanent. And we can let it just, that's an actual truth that we can recognize and rely on. Of course, in order to do that, this cultivating of our, say, within the meditation, what we're cultivating, when we say cultivating mindfulness, cultivating awareness, in the idiom in the Thai language that they use, that the teachers use, is cultivating the quality of the one who knows, just that, and it's an idiom that's pointing to the ability of our the fundamental ability of the mind to just know and to experience phenomena from a place of knowing rather than a place of reacting or being dragged along by the moods of the mind. One can actually just rest in a place of knowing and just looking after that quality of knowing things clearly. If something is unpleasant, you can know that. It's not going to be, it's not a huge problem. Something can be pleasant. You can know that without getting dragged along by it, caught up in it, proliferating from that. Something we can experience the things, both the things that we like or dislike, we can just know it. And it's from that place of knowing that we can be making choices so that the choices of, say, a peace, the choices of integrity, the choices of compassion, this coming from this quality of knowing, or from this one who knows, and it's a fundamental quality of the human mind, And being able to nurture that so that it's, you know, we're looking after that, that quality of knowing rather than just following the moods, getting overwhelmed by doubt or confusion, getting caught up in agitation and restlessness, coming back to the quality of knowing so that we can know and see things clearly. And it's a, in looking after that knowing, it isn't something that, I say, one, it's like forcing the mind to be clear, or forcing the mind to be comply with one's ideals of what one thinks this knowing should be. It's more like really, it's more like how a mother looks after a small child. You want to give the child enough space to be able to crawl around, get experience, but not end up in any danger or difficulty. And you know, a mother's attuned to the movements, the activity of the child, but it's not sort of controlling or forcing too much, but it's not just letting the child do whatever it wants. So in the same way with the mind, one needs to, you know, say, encourage it, support it, nurture those qualities of clarity and stillness and peace, but not be sort of pushing it too much, forcing it too much, because we clamp down, or we get, it's just an, it's the way that the mind, how it responds to if it's being pushed too much, it's sort of like a cat. You have a cat, and you, even if you put some food out and some water, you push a cat toward it and say, go and have something. The cat's going to just dig its paws in. It's not going to, no way it's going to do it. So that our mind tends to be like that as well. We force it too much, and it's going to push back. So that skill that we have to develop in learning how to both encourage and support the mind in its, because the nature, our fundamental nature is that we prefer to be happy rather than to be miserable. So that the finding the ways that help the mind to develop those qualities of a brightness, of peace, of clarity, and those are you know, both within the meditation, but also within the, I mean, that's that whole practice of the virtue and integrity, meditation itself. And then the wisdom and discernment, and being able to reflect and investigate, what is it that's actually of real benefit? What is it that's conducive to happiness and well-being? And this is where, you know, the aspects of refuges come in. And the traditional refuges of Buddha Dhamma Sangha, but they're pointing to the qualities of wisdom, discernment, of virtue, and of truth. So that these are, you know, one can easily overlook the importance of these. So, because that's a, say, from the time of the earliest establishing of the Buddhist teachings, those aspects of refuge were put in place. I mean, it's even the like the ordination for the monks was the one of the earliest ordinations. The way of ordination, going forth, was just to sort of, yeah, Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami. I take the Buddha as my refuge, take the Dhamma as my refuge, I take Sangha as a refuge. For the second time, for the third time. And that constituted the going forth, the ordination. And that was in the very earliest days of the Buddha's dispensation, because it got more formalized later. But since the very earliest times of the Buddha's teachings, this aspect of going for refuge has played an integral part in the training. And so that sense of reflecting, investigating, what is it that the mind, what does it take as a refuge? You know, what is our inclination? Say when we're a bit upset or uncertain, yeah, where does the mind gravitate towards? What does it actually take as a refuge? And you know, I think for most of us, it just depends on our inclinations, but you know, we tend to either, you know, go to some sort of doubt or confusion or aversion or some kind of desire system. And that's where our mind goes. That's the inclination. So then to be able to train the mind to make the choices where one actually chooses peace, chooses clarity, chooses a sense of well-being rather than any kind of agitation. And that's not a, you know, for it to be a refuge, it's not just an idea, it's something that, you know, that's one's trained oneself to a point that and one isn't thinking about it, it's just where the mind goes. And so this aspect of training and cultivation forms an integral part of our practice, so that for those of us who are in residence, particularly during this time, winter retreat, we've got the opportunity to be focusing our attention on the training, on practice. But, you know, really for all of us, whether we're monastics or lay people, whether it's in winter retreat or any other time of the year, that's a fundamental foundation of the Buddhist teachings, is this is a training, this is a way of perceiving, a way of living that we can be cultivating and developing. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.
So.